recording equipment, and great programming for all of KBOO's listeners. Donating your vehicle is easy. All you need to do is call our toll-free number and schedule a free, convenient pickup time. We can pick your car up nearly anywhere, even from the repair shop. Make sure you have the title to your vehicle. The tow facility will provide you with a donation receipt. For more information, call our toll-free number, 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hi there, good afternoon. Welcome to KBOO 90.7's Labor Radio Hour. I am your host, Stephanie Patricio. So glad to have you here. Hope you're having a great day, afternoon. If you're just starting your shift, we're glad that you can join us. Today, we're going to be talking with Chelsea, who is an organizer slash volunteer with Familia Unida's campaign. Against boycotting Driscoll. Chelsea, do we have you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here, and thank you so much for having me tonight, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm actually here in Crescent City, California, and Ramon Torres and Lázaro Matamora are in the next room talking to about 30 farm workers and organizers about their current campaign. So really happy to be here with you and glad you in Portland could tune into our event here in Crescent City.
Awesome. We're glad that you can be on the air with us tonight. I know there was a little bit of switcheroo, so why don't we kind of take a step back. Can you tell us your name, your role, or what you're doing with Familias Unidas, and then we can jump into the campaign, maybe give a little bit of backstory before we do that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely, thank you. So my name is Chelsea, and I live in Bellingham, Washington, which is north of Burlington, where the union is from, where the union is founded. And I joined the boycott 2.5 years ago, right when the farm workers initially went on strike. They came to a university, Western Washington University, and asked a group of students to form a boycott committee to support them. At that time, they were boycotting Sukuma Brothers Berry Farm, the farm they work for. And In 2.5 years, that boycott has grown to a national and then international boycott of not just Sukumas, but Driscoll's. And as the boycott grew, so did the need for organizers. And so now myself and 5 other people, our job is to coordinate boycott committees that have started not just in Washington State, but all down the West Coast and across the nation. There's boycott committees in D.C., Florida, Detroit. And right now we are on a 30-day West Coast tour, traveling from Washington all the way down to the border, the U.S.-Mexico border, stopping in union halls and community rooms, classrooms, churches, talking to people, talking to organizers, talking to farm workers about the struggle for a union contract for Familias Unidas por la Justicia and the boycott of Driscoll's. So we're hoping out of this tour that many more boycott committees will form.
That's awesome. That's great. Thank you for all that information. I like to start out by asking folks what drew them to organize. I know you mentioned that you were a student, it sounds like. I don't know if you haven't, a lot of folks have personal experience in organizing through their families or just personal lived experience. But what drew you to organize?
Absolutely. The farm workers were really clear when they came and talked to a group of maybe 30 students. It was just an afternoon in the evening, and they came and said, look, this is what we're struggling to do. There's conditions on our farm that are inhumane, and we want to change them, but we want to change them not just for ourselves, but for everyone. And that really farm workers leading is the best way to change the food system, and that's a system that impacts everyone. And so in terms of talking about how colonization makes it so it takes indigenous people off of their land, displaces them from their land and puts them in positions where they have to work in conditions that are inhumane in order just to survive, that's something that's not just a story of farm workers, but of many, many people. And standing in solidarity with those people is the best way not just to transform the lives of workers, but of the entire food system. And that's something that everyone interacts with.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you talk about the piece of indigenous folks, and especially that tie to land. Can you talk a little bit more about, I know you mentioned a union, and then you also mentioned Familias Unidas. Can you give us a little bit of background info on the organizations that are standing alongside the farm workers to organize?
Absolutely. So Familias Unidas de los CCA is made up of about 450 farm workers, most of whom, almost all of whom, are indigenous to Oaxaca. Many of them speak Chiqui and Mixteco, and they decided to form their union back in 2013. Since then, they have joined in solidarity with indigenous farm workers in San Quintin, Mexico, who actually, this is their one-year anniversary of going on strike. The Sindicato Independiente Nacional Democrático de Jornales Agriculturales. It's a long name, but that's the name of the independent union, farm worker union in San Quintin, Mexico, who have just ended their march to the border. And so now what we're seeing is indigenous farm workers across the U.S. and Mexico, across borders, rising up, saying boycott Driscoll's to change their conditions, but also to move forward in leadership as indigenous farm workers united, despite the fact that there's a border that is between them.
Right. Can you talk a little bit more about the framework that Familias Unidas uses? I've seen a lot of pictures, and I think that they, you know, pictures or images are really telling, and that, you know, there's not a lot of words involved. So it's like capturing an image or maybe like an interaction that's going on. What I've seen is a lot of young folks, a lot of children. I want to say a lot of women, but there seems to be a different way that Familias Unidas is talking about farm worker organizing. The example is like you're talking about indigenous folks. Can you talk a little bit about the framework or how would I put it? The theory, the ideas that go behind the organizing that y'all are doing?
Absolutely. The heart of the union is really a democratic one. All of the decisions they make together. And to give a story, when the union formed, it was when they first went on strike, before there was a union, it was because Federico Lopez had been fired for asking for a raise. And he came to the door of Ramon Torres, who is now the president of the union, and said, "What should I do?" And Ramon Torres, he didn't have an answer. And so what they did is they went literally door to door of everyone in the camp and asked, "What should we do? How should we respond?" And that is where the decision for the strike came from. And that is really the roots of the union was planted in, is that collective decision making, and something that my work as an organizer, what I do when I'm not doing logistics is we provide childcare, we provide just kind of support, because it's really an entire family effort. You know, it's not just people in a boardroom somewhere. It's the whole, when they have their meetings, it's the whole family there.
The fact that folks went door to door seems rooted in indigenous practice, right? Not only just, you know, two men making the decision, but actually getting the involvement of the community involved. So I wonder how that's played a role in the organizing that y'all have done. Like, are things made trilingual or, you know, bilingual, not in English and Spanish? How do you see that playing out?
Right. So in terms of language, some of the youth are trilingual, and the meetings are held mostly in Mixteco and Spanish, and really only English if there's a guest. And so that's makes sense for the farm workers. That's how they do their organizing. In terms of just that tradition being how it's played out in the boycott, it's really something that's being taught to supporters as well, that they're following farm workers, that the farm workers are taking the lead, and that they're teaching people how to act in solidarity with them. And I think that is one of the greatest lessons that has come to me personally as I've been doing this work with the union. And I think that's really embodied in the tour that we're doing now. We could have, you know, tried to book speaking events and packed rooms full of hundreds of people to tell the story, but instead we're just going church to union hall to classroom, from table to table, having meals with people, talking to them, and hearing their story. It's not just about telling about the boycott of Driscoll's. It's not just about forming boycott committees to support this union. It's also about hearing our collective struggle and hearing the struggles of farm workers and oppressed workers in the areas that we travel to. And I think that is, again, rooted in how these indigenous farm workers are organizing.
That's great. You mentioned something about a lesson that you had learned. What's it been like for you as a student? And I don't know very much about you, but how has it been for you as a student to kind of work within the movement? And it seems like, you know, being asked to take a step back and be standing alongside the farm workers, not leading them. How has that experience played out for you?
It has been fantastic. It's the first word that comes to mind. So at the time I was working at the university, I wasn't a student. And so it's really beautiful to watch students be able to learn from farm workers in an area where we're told that we should be learning from people with PhDs, or we should be thinking about careers, and really taking the time to say, no, actually, this is the kind of learning I want to do, and that the farm workers have taught us so much in terms of what it actually means to do solidarity as people who have access to education. In my case, I have citizenship status and I'm white. Mm-hmm. So really learning about what it means to listen and to follow with your whole heart.
Thank you for that. You mentioned taking the lead from farm workers to change the food system. So it seems like, is there... And I also want to get into how the boycott went from a national boycott to an international boycott. But it seems like there are not bigger goals, but like a bigger framework that Familias Unidas uses. Can you talk a little bit more about farm workers and changing the food system that we currently have?
Absolutely. So I think the farm workers, they know that it's not just about wages, you know, it's not just about money, it's about getting a union contract, because that's what they need right now in order to have some kind of political place to work from, in order to be able to kind of have a legal protection in working with the bosses. But to them, it's more about being able to be respected in their work and to not have to pass on intergenerational poverty to their youth, and that this isn't something that's happening just in Burlington. It's not just happening in Skagit Valley, but that they've really seen the displacement of their people off of their own lands and being forced into a labor system that requires them to work, and then once they're working, being exploited from that work, and wanting to end that. And right now, the union contract seems like the best vehicle to end that.
Can you talk about so you mentioned Federico Lopez was fired. What are some other things that, I think most of us, or hopefully a lot of us, know that conditions for farm workers are not good. But can you talk a little bit more about what gave rise to the demands that folks are making, and what demands they're making, and what folks hope to get out of a union contract?
Absolutely. on that first day, the farm workers came together and they wrote on the first strike, they wrote a list of 17 demands, and that included things immediate, like the firing of a particular supervisor that was being abusive, to broader things, such as they want to be paid a living wage, they want access to health care, they want to live have working conditions and living conditions that are not degrading. They want access to breaks and lunch breaks, and that kind of combined the picture of what they wanted for themselves instead of the conditions they already had.
Mm-hmm. So what are some demands that folks are making? I know that there are some collective bargaining agreements that farm workers in Washington have put forward that they operate under. What's different about what Federico and Ramon are demanding?
So I think what they want is to secure recognition of the union by the company Sukuma Brothers Dairy Farm, so that they can then negotiate that contract. Without recognition of the union and a contract, regardless of if the company decides, okay, we'll give you a 2-cent raise, mm-hmm. or okay, we'll abide by the law and give you a rest breaks. Without a union contract, if the political pressure depreciates, they are concerned they'd be back in the place that they started. Mm-hmm. And when they first went on strike, the company did negotiate just between the workers and the company. And then once they had signed that, 3 weeks later, they went back on the agreement they made. So they know that they needed to be a legal framework, not just an agreement on
mm-hmm.
paper.
Mm-hmm. And is that what gave rise to them being able to like back off and, or, you know, back down and say, we no longer hold true to this agreement?
So the company wasn't following through on the agreement. They weren't providing breaks. And so that was the moment when they said, okay, we need a union to protect ourselves.
Right. So it, because that simply was just an agreement. It wasn't a collective bargaining agreement.
No.
Okay.
No, it was just an agreement on paper.
Right. Yeah. What's it been like? I know y'all are in Bellingham, right?
Yes. So
that's where the campaign...
The union is based in Burlington, Washington.
Burlington, Washington. What's the climate like there? What's it been like to start off there and be talking to people about what farm workers want?
It is a fairly conservative area. The growers there have a lot of money and a lot of power. So I think for a lot of people, hearing farm workers speak out against abuses on the farm is something that is unusual. Hmm. But there's been a lot of support from community members and from unions. And so really the upwelling of support nationally has made all the difference.
What's that look like? Like, how are other unions standing in solidarity with farm workers? Because historically, right, we know that, for example, with the UFW, the Teamsters were sent in to, like, break up strikes or break up, picket
right.
lines. So historically, right, and as with other, you know, marginalized groups that are unionizing, black car porters, right, same thing. So how have other unions stood in solidarity, and how have other community groups stood in solidarity with the farm workers in, like, concrete ways?
Yes, absolutely. So the union has been endorsed by the Washington State Labor Council, and that was huge. Unions have taken up the boycott and have started doing picket lines. And that has also been huge. But I wanted to address something that you mentioned of retaliation by the company and strike breaking, because that has happened. Sukuma filed for H-2A guest workers.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially through that program, they were requesting...
Hey, Chelsea?
Yes?
What is a H-2A... Yes. guest worker. Can you let...
That's a great question. So H2A is a program that allows farmers to bring in workers from Mexico contracted to be here just during the working season. Mm-hmm. And they're an extremely precarious situation because the grower has the ability to revoke their green card based on their work. So if they complain or if they quit, things like that, their visa is only valid through that company. And so this is a program that has been lobbied for intensively in Washington, particularly in eastern Washington, and it's just starting to gain traction in western Washington, in agricultural areas on the west side of Washington. Wow. And this is something that a program that Satuma decided to use summer ago, trying to displace the workers who were unionizing. And so they requested a little over 400 H-2A guest workers to come in, which would mean then that the indigenous farm workers who have been working for Satuma, some of them working for Satuma for a decade or more, would no longer have their jobs. And this would effectively be a way to break the union.
Wow. Wow. And what's it, is it possible to talk to H2A workers? Like how are the farm workers taking that on, knowing that these are folks that are, you know, also coming in under very oppressive conditions?
Absolutely. And that was something that was like, we want to stand with these workers, but the mechanism of H2A is unjust. It's not the workers that are doing harm. It is the policy and the H2A program itself that is doing harm to workers here. And essentially, it was almost impossible for union members, to talk to H2A members. H2A guest workers were told that they would be fired if they talked to anyone from the union, and they were kept in conditions that were separate. Fortunately, the members organized in response to this application because the application is not valid if there's a labor dispute going on. Mm-hmm. And so what the workers did is they went and they collected signatures from every single person who had worked for Satuma, who said, yes, I'm able and willing and ready to work next year, and essentially proved that there was no labor dispute. There was a labor dispute, and that there was a labor population ready to work, and that there was no labor shortage at all at Satuma Brothers Berry Farms, and effectively, for the first time, stopped the application. The application was denied.
Oh, wow. That's great. Can you talk, we've got a couple more minutes left. I want to make sure to talk about the boycott campaign and how it's grown. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the boycott originally started as a boycott of Satuma Berry's farm. And under pressure, after that kind of first season, there was a lot of activity from boycott committees in Bellingham, in Seattle, in Tacoma, in Olympia, but mostly in Washington. And Satuma responded to the pressure of the boycott by stopping selling the berries under the Satuma Brothers label. And so what was happening is that we no longer saw the Satuma label, but the Satumas have a several decade relationship with Driscoll's, which is an international berry distributor, the largest berry distributor in the world. And Satuma sells a large portion of their fresh berries to Driscoll's, and they to be sold in stores. So that is when the union decided to move into a boycott of Driscoll's. And Driscoll's really does have the ability to end this conflict now by requesting that growers, both in Washington and in San Quintin, sit down and negotiate a union contract. And so from there, the boycott really escalated, and we were seeing boycott committees come up all around the country. And in March of 2015, workers in San Quintin, over 80,000 workers, went on strike because of similar abuses at their workplace, and they called for a boycott of Driscoll's. From that moment, the boycott was an international boycott, and the two unions sat down and agreed to that they would boycott Driscoll's until there was a union contract signed, not just for themselves, but also for the other union as well. Mm-hmm. And so that at that moment, that was the moment when it moved into being an international boycott on Driscoll's berries.
Right. And so the ask now is to boycott Driscoll's berries at any shops where you see them, boycott any and all.
Not quite.
No.
Yes, boycott Driscoll berries. But what we need more than just kind of sporadic consumer involvement. We need concerted organizing effort. We want folks to join boycott committees, to start boycott committees in their wherever they might be. And we're specifically asking people to talk to their local Costco or Whole Foods. These are one of the largest buyers of Driscoll berries. Mm. And if they receive enough pressure across the nation from boycott committees, you know, they could be small groups, 4, 5, 6 people, continually saying to their Costco or Whole Foods, you need to pull these berries. If Costco or Whole Foods decides to pull those berries, that would be a huge victory for farm workers and could potentially be enough pressure on Driscoll's that they would pressure growers to sign a union contract. And we've found that, you know, Costco has fairly good policies around their employees, and we really don't think that them selling Driscoll's is in line with their own policies. So we're asking people to form boycott committees, go to your local Costco or Whole Foods, and express to them and continue to apply pressure until there's a union contract signed.
Thank you for that. Thank you for clearing that up. Where can people go to get more information if they are interested in starting a boycott committee?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked. That's like my number one job. So we have a website. It's boycottsukumaberries.com.
Go ahead.
boycottsukumaberries.com.
Okay.
We're also on Facebook. You can stay tuned into the tour on Familias Unidas por la Justicia. That's their Facebook page. And the best way, if you want to start a boycott committee, is to email the boycott coordination team. We're the one that's responsible for getting you all the flyers, all the messaging, and to provide your feedback to the union. And you can email us at boycottcoordination@gmail.com.
boycottcoordination@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that on this tour, on March 31st, which is Cesar Chavez's birthday, we will be in Watsonville, which is the headquarters for Driscoll's Berries. And we're going to be there with local members of Watsonville, and members of the union are going to be there. And we're going to be calling directly, knocking on the doors of the CEOs of Driscoll's, asking them, calling for them to pressure the growers to sign a union contract. We are asking everyone to hold pickets on that day in solidarity with that effort.
Hold pickets at Costco or Whole Foods, or is there anywhere specific folks should be holding pickets?
Costco or Whole Foods on March 31st.
Okay.
And just know that we'll be down in Watsonville knocking on the doors of CEOs, and it'd be really great to know that we can say, hey, right now, you know, there might be 100 of us here, but there are hundreds more in front of Whole Foods and Costco saying boycott Driscoll's.
That's right. Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for letting us know about the work that Familias Unidas por la Justicia is doing. Thanks for your work. We hope to hear more about the farm workers winning their demands. Do you have any last words or anything else you'd like to say?
Just that boycott Driscoll's.
That's right. Thank you
so much, Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time. Thank you. thank you so much to all our listeners. This is going to be my last show. I thank you so much for the opportunity to learn and hear about labor struggles throughout our nation. I'm signing off. Thank you for being here. And yeah, in solidarity. See ya.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Smoldering Fires, produced by Passenart. The play runs from March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. Smoldering Fires explores how to apply the ideas and struggles of the civil rights movement to contemporary city life through the point of view of two young friends who differ in temperament and approach. Again, that's Smoldering Fires, March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 Northeast Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.